Chapter 5. Thick, an anonymous heading colon schooner yacht hermit, and was dated 4 days before. The message said that on a hazy night the yacht had gone ashore upon some outlying shoals off the coast of Borneo. The land was low. The opinion of the sailing master was that the vessel had gone ashore at the top of high water, spring tides. The coast was completely deserted to all appearance. During the 4 days they had been stranded there, they had sighted in the distance two small native vessels, which did not approach. The owner concluded by asking any commander of a homeward bound ship to report the yacht's position in Anger on his way through Sunda Straits, or to any British or Dutch man of war he might meet. The letter ended by anticipatory thanks, the offer to pay any expenses in connection with the sending of messages from Anger, and the usual polite expressions. Folding the paper slowly in the old creases, Lingard said, "I'm not going to Anger nor anywhere near." "Any place will do, I fancy," said Carter. "Not the place where I am bound to," answered Lingard, opening the letter again, and glancing at it uneasily. "He does not describe very well the coast, and his latitude is very uncertain," he went on. I am not clear in my mind where exactly you are stranded. And yet I know every inch of that land over there." Carter cleared his throat and began to talk in his slow drawl. He seemed to dole out facts, to disclose with sparing words the features of the coast, but every word showed the minuteness of his observation, the clear vision of a seaman able to master quickly the aspect of a strange land, and of a strange sea. He presented, with concise lucidity, the picture of the tangle of reefs and sandbanks, through which the yacht had miraculously blundered in the dark, before she took the ground. "The weather seems clear enough at sea," he observed, finally, and stopped to drink a long draught. Lingard, bending over the table, had been listening with eager attention. Carter went on in his curt and deliberate manner. "I noticed some high trees on what I take to be the mainland to the south, and whoever has business in that bight was smart enough to whitewash two of them. One on the point, and another farther in. Landmarks, I guess. What's the matter, Captain?" Lingard had jumped to his feet, but Carter's exclamation caused him to sit down again. Nothing. Tell me, how many men have you in that yacht?" 23, besides the gentry, the owner, his wife and a Spanish gentleman a friend they picked up in Manila." "So you were coming from Manila?" "Aye. Bound for Batavia. The owner wishes to study the Dutch colonial system. Wants to expose it, he says. One can't help hearing a lot when keeping watch after you know how it is. Then we are going to Ceylon to meet the mail boat there. The owner is going home as he came out, overland through Egypt. The yacht would return round the Cape, of course." "A lady?" said Lingard. "You say there is a lady on board. Are you armed?" "Not much," replied Carter, negligently. "There are a few muskets and two sporting guns aft. That's about all. I fancy it's too much, or not enough," he added with a faint smile. Lingard looked at him narrowly. "Did you come out from home in that craft?" he asked. "Not I. I am not one of them regular yacht hands. I came out of the hospital in Hong Kong. I've been 2 years on the China coast." He stopped, then added in an explanatory murmur. "Opium clippers, you know. Nothing of brass buttons about me. My ship left me behind, and I was in want of work. I took this job, but I didn't want to go home particularly. It's slow work, after sailing with old Robinson in the Lye Moon. That was my ship. Heard of her, Captain?"
Yes,
said Lingard, hastily. Look here, Mr. Carter, which way was your chief officer trying for Singapore? Through the Straits of Rio?"
"I suppose so," answered Carter in a slightly surprised tone. "Why do you ask?"
"Just to know. What is it, Mr. Shaw?"
"There's a black cloud rising to the northward, sir, and we shall get a breeze directly," said Shaw from the doorway. He lingered there with his eyes fixed on the decanters.
"Will you have a glass?"
said Lingard, leaving his seat. I will go up and have a look. He went on deck. Shaw approached the table and began to help himself, handling the bottles in profound silence and with exaggerated caution, as if he had been measuring out of fragile vessels a dose of some deadly poison. Carter, his hands in his pockets and leaning back, examined him from head to foot with a cool stare. The mate of the brig raised the glass to his lips and, glaring above the rim at the stranger, drained the contents slowly. You have a fine nose for finding ships in the dark, mister, he said, distinctly, putting the glass on the table with extreme gentleness. Eh? What's that? I sighted you just after sunset. And you knew where to look to, said Shaw, staring hard. I looked to the westward, where there was still some light, as any sensible man would do, retorted the other a little impatiently. W, what are you trying to get at? And you have a ready tongue to blow about yourself, haven't you? Never saw such a man in my life, declared Carter, with a return of his nonchalant manner. Why, you seem to be troubled about something. I don't like boats to come sneaking up from nowhere in particular, alongside a ship when I am in charge of the deck. I can keep a lookout as well as any man out of home ports, but I hate to be circumvented by muffled doors and such ungentlemanlike tricks. Yacht officer indeed. These seas must be full of such yachtsmen. I consider you played a mean trick on me. I told my old man there was nothing in sight at sunset, and no more there was. I believe you blundered upon us by chance for all your boasting about sunsets and bearings. Gammon! I know you came on blindly on top of us, and with muffled oars too. Do you call that decent? If I did muffle the oars, it was for a good reason. I wanted to slip past a cove where some native craft were moored. That was common prudence in such a small boat, and not armed as I am. I saw you right enough, but I had no intention to startle anybody. Take my word for it. I wish you had gone somewhere else, growled Shaw. I hate to be put in the wrong through accident and untruthfulness there. Here's my old man calling me. He left the cabin hurriedly and soon afterward Lingard came down and sat again facing Carter across the table. His face was grave but resolute. We shall get the breeze directly, he said. Then, sir, said Carter, getting up, if you will give me back that letter I shall go on cruising about here to speak some other ship. I trust you will report us wherever you are going. I am going to the yacht, and I shall keep the letter, answered Lingard with decision. I know exactly where she is, and I must go to the rescue of those people. It's most fortunate you've fallen in with me, Mr. Carter. Fortunate for them, and fortunate for me, he added in a lower tone. Yes, drawled Carter, reflectively. T, there may be a tidy bit of salvage money if you should get the vessel off, but I don't think you can do much. I had better stay out here and try to speak some gunboat. You must come back to your ship with me, said Lingard, authoritatively. And never mind the gunboats. That wouldn't be carrying out my orders, argued Carter. I've got to speak a homeward bound ship, or a man of war, that's plain enough. I am not anxious to knock about for days in an open boat, but let me fill my freshwater breaker, Captain, and I will be off. Nonsense, said Lingard, sharply. Why, you've got to come with me to show the place and help. I'll take your boat in tow. Carter did not seem convinced. Lingard laid a heavy hand on his shoulder. Look here, young fellow. I am Tom Lingard, and there's not a white man among these islands, and very few natives, that have not heard of me. My luck brought you into my ship and now I've got you. You must stay. You must. The last us burst out loud and sharp like a pistol shot. Carter stepped back. Do you mean you would keep me by force? He asked, startled. Force, repeated Lingard. I at rest with you. I cannot let you speak any vessel. Your yacht has gone ashore in a most inconvenient place for me, and with your boats sent off here and there, you would bring every infernal gunboat buzzing to a spot that was as quiet and retired as the heart of man could wish. You stranding just on that spot of the whole coast was my bad luck, and that I could not help. You coming upon me like this is my good luck, and that I hold. He dropped his clenched fist, big and muscular, in the light of the lamp on the black cloth, amongst the glitter of glasses, with the strong fingers close tight upon the firm flesh of the palm. He left it there for a moment, as if showing Carter that luck he was going to hold. And he went on. Do you know into what hornet's nest your stupid people have blundered? How much do you think their lives are worth, just now? Not a brass farthing, if the breeze fails me for another 24 hours. You may well open your eyes. It is so. And it may be too late now, while I am arguing with you here. He tapped the table with his knuckles, and the glasses, waking up, jingled a thin plaintive finale to his speech. Carter stood leaning against the sideboard. He was amazed by the unexpected turn of the conversation. His jaw dropped slightly, and his eyes never swerved for a moment from Lingard's face. The silence in the cabin lasted only a few seconds, but to Carter, who waited breathlessly, it seemed very long. And all at once he heard in it, for the first time, the cabin clock tick distinctly, in pulsating beats, as though a little heart of metal behind the dial had been started into sudden palpitation. A gunboat! Shouted Lingard, suddenly, as if he had seen only in that moment, by the light of some vivid flash of thought, all the difficulties of the situation. If you don't go back with me, there will be nothing left for you to go back to very soon. Your gunboat won't find a single ship's rib, or a single corpse left for a landmark. That she won't. It isn't a gunboat skipper you want. I am the man you want. You don't know your luck when you see it, but I know mine, I do. And look here, he touched Carter's chest with his forefinger, and said with a sudden gentleness of tone. I am a white man inside and out. I won't let inoffensive people and a woman to come to harm, if I can help it. And if I can't help, nobody can. You understand, nobody. There's no time for it. But I am like any other man that is worth his salt. I won't let the end of an undertaking go by the board while there is a chance to hold on. And it's like this, his voice was persuasive, almost caressing. He had hold now of a coat button, and tugged at it slightly as he went on in a confidential manner. As it turns out, Mr. Carter, I would in a manner of speaking I would as soon shoot you where you stand as let you go to raise an alarm all over the sea about your confounded yacht. I have other lives to consider, and friends and promises and myself too. I shall keep you, he concluded, sharply. Carter drew a long breath. On the deck above, the two men could hear soft footfalls, short murmurs, indistinct words spoken near the skylight. Shaw's voice rang out loudly in growling tones. Furl the royals, you Tyndall. It's the queerest old go, muttered Carter, looking down onto the floor. Why, you are a strange man. I suppose I must believe what you say, unless you and that fat mate of yours are a couple of escaped lunatics that got hold of a brig by some means. Why, that chap up there wanted to pick a quarrel with me for coming aboard, and now you threaten to shoot me rather than let me go. Not that I care much about that. For some time or other you would get hanged for it, and you don't look like a man that will end that way. If what you say is only half true, I ought to get back to the yacht as quick as ever I can. It strikes me that your coming to them will be only a small mercy, anyhow, and I may be of some use, but this is the queerest. May I go in my boat? As you like, said Lingard. There's a rain squall coming. I am in charge, and will get wet along of my chaps. Give us a good long line, Captain. It's done already, said Lingard. Why, you seem a sensible sailorman, and can see that it would be useless to try and give me the slip. For a man so ready to shoot, you seem very trustful, drawled Carter. If I cut adrift in a squall, I stand a pretty fair chance not to see you again. You just try, said Lingard, dryly. I have eyes in this brig, young man, that will see your boat when you couldn't see the ship. You are of the kind I like, but if you monkey with me, I will find you, and when I find you, I will run you down as surely as I stand here. Carter slapped his thigh and his eyes twinkled. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.